Mike, you there? Mike, you there? Mike, you hearing anything?
Hey, Hank, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me? I can hear you. Can you hear me? You hear me?
Mike, are you hearing me?
Yeah, now I'm hearing you.
Okay. Indy's hearing us as well. So it's either something with my headset or something with, but I wasn't hearing the song. Did you hear the song that played at the beginning?
Nope.
Yeah. Who knows? Anyway, we're on now. So.
All right.
Gosh, I'm gonna have to figure out my headset and all that good stuff. So, just to make sure I can figure out what the hell's going on. So, hell, gosh, we had a hell of a win last night. And let's just get right to it. Let's break down. So first of all, I am Hank Jones, along with Avid Mike. This is College Football with Hank Jones and Avid Mike on Global Patriot Radio here at blogtalkradio.com. And my gosh, week four, I for the rest of the country, I'm not sure there was much, you know, that really made any kind of noise, would you say?
I mean, K-State getting blown out. That was the big one that stuck out to me. So
yeah. So if we're going to stay non-Big Ten, despite the temptation, K-State getting blown out was kind of a shock, no doubt. Tennessee and Oklahoma was a decent game. I didn't see all of it, and not much of it actually. Missouri, you know, escaping over Vandy. That's kind of, you know. Miami looked like they were having a little bit of a rough start, but it didn't end up that way.
They had a bad interception early in the game, so that was the biggest thing. So.
Yeah, Oklahoma State, Utah.
Fun
I'll
game
tell you
to
why
watch. That was two good defenses, and, you know, that was fun to watch that game for me. I don't know.
Well what's happened to Ollie Gordon II, who is, like supposed to be – The be all end all. And I'm not going to get into Caleb Johnson later, but Ollie Gordon II has not lit it up the way he is supposed to have this year. He was, you know, certainly a Heisman hopeful, but he seems to have dropped up.
Did they graduate, you know, some offensive line, or is it a different philosophy they're trying to do this year with, you know, on the passing game? I don't know.
Yeah,
it is interesting because he was the leading rusher last year in the NCAA. So
he got 11 carries. Axton Gianti for Boise State got 127 yards on 11 carries, which is nothing Caleb Johnson hasn't done, by the way. But even though I said I wasn't going to talk about him. So they limited him, obviously. But, Miami South Florida was close early. Kansas State, BYU, I don't know what the heck happened, other than it was at BYU, so you can expect that a little bit. LSU didn't really have any – UCLA kept it close against LSU. Notre Dame, Miami, nothing. Another loss in the top 25 that the bloom was already off the rose is Northern Illinois going down to Buffalo in OT.
Well, keeping in that same vein – Notre Dame struggled with – who did they play yesterday? They were struggling with another
Miami of Ohio.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. I think that's going to happen a lot because I don't think Notre Dame is as good as advertised. I think they want us to think they're as good as advertised, but You know, but yeah, no, no real surprise.
That's what's killing them. They keep going and just getting a quarterback each new year, and it shows. I mean, there's no – I mean, Riley Leonard threw his first touchdown pass as a Notre Dame quarterback yesterday. And it was the fourth
game. I didn't realize that. Wow.
Yeah.
I did not realize that. So I would put Northern Illinois in as a disappointment, because you kind of wanted them after that upset of Notre Dame to run through the back and, you know, maybe – believe it or not, go 13-0 and be that playoff team. That's not going to happen. Boise State's one of the ones looking like it, but who knows? I mean, the G5 stuff almost doesn't – do we call it G6 with the two-team Pac-12? I don't even know. But
They're part of the Mountain West this year. So that's part of the –
Let's get to the Big Ten. What shocks you this weekend in the conference?
I watched a lot of the Rutgers game, and they looked dominant at times through the first half, and then they held on to win by a field goal at the end. I think that was my biggest one. It was almost like an Iowa game. Tail of two halves, you know? You know what I'm saying? So that was my biggest one, would be – it wasn't upset. It was just like surprised that they, you know, held on after, you know, they were just moving the ball, and their defense was really, I mean, it was playing what they had. We saw them do for the last year or so, playing really solid ball across. And then I looked at the second half and I'm like, wow, what happened? And then you look at the stats and it was like, it just fell off the table in that second half.
Purdue going down to Oregon State, not a shock because they went out there.
No.
But Northwestern going down to Washington, 24-5 to Washington, and it just has you wondering. Because Washington didn't actually look all that great, I didn't think, in the highlights that I saw. I mean, I think Northwestern's just not that good.
They got a quarterback problem. They got that transfer in, and it just isn't clicking for them. It's just
– yeah.
Yeah, good.
Indiana, I think, is for real. I mean, no, Charlotte is not a world beater, but Indiana, I think, is definitely for real. I think they, Kurt Cignetti has, you know, who was from James Madison, who hung 70 out of North Carolina yesterday, by the way.
Yeah, that was crazy.
I think he's for real. I think he built James Madison, and they'll keep it going for a little while at least. But yeah, Indiana is for real. God, they've got some serious talent on that team.
Good thing we don't find them this year.
Rourke is. I wouldn't say he's not an explosive, but he's more than a game manager. I mean, he just seems to have a really good field presence. Yeah, he has a really good field presence awareness.
Well, he's very efficient. I mean, you look at his numbers from yesterday: 16 of 20 for 258. I mean, that's just maximizing every drop back for him. So that's just, God, I wish we had that. Anyway, we won't go there yet.
Not yet. Michigan State, after starting off looking like they were going to be, after Ohio State has next week. So I was kind of thinking, hey, this could be a nice, when the Hawks get a bye week before that, I'm thinking, hey, man, yeah, they play Michigan State. Maybe they'll get beat. Michigan State just gave up the ghost. I mean, how do you give up with a minute left? How do you give up before? I mean, I shouldn't ask that of our defense lately, but although yesterday it was a little better. But, I mean, really shouldn't ask how do you give up a 43-yard touchdown pass. But actually, if you saw – I didn't watch, but I listened on SiriusXM Friday night to Washington State, San Jose State. And San Jose State, by the way, is, you know, one of those teams that they're like the Fresno State this year that, you know, sneaks up on teams and is actually a really solid team. In fact, their quarterback is a former Washington State Cougar, but, you know, transferred. But they did it. You know, Washington State got down. They came back. They got down. And they gave up, you know, like a 35-yard touchdown pass with, you know, half a minute left to go behind, and they tied it on a 50-something yard field goal, which was kind of – but, I mean, how do you – I know that teams get burnt, and I know that, you know, we've had that issue, but holy crap, I've seen that a couple times just this season. How do you give up? And I'm not talking Hail Marys. I'm talking just basic, you know, post routes, out routes. Damn, what are our defensive backs doing? I mean, they might be just
looking at their own. Everything in front of you and then rally to the tackle.
Yeah, I think what they're doing is they're checking their Venmo. I think they're checking their Venmo for their NIL balances. That's got to be it.
Too much screen time, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying. ESPN, by the way, speaking of guy, Travis Hunter is the real deal, and he had a big fumble recovery and all that. But ESPN's making a big deal out of Colorado, and they're going to keep doing it. I don't know why, because, you know, Big 12 is not an ESPN.
Time.
Yeah, but it's not an ESPN conference anymore. You know, it's sort of a Fox conference, more or less. So.
Yeah, Fox made, I mean, if you remember last year, for the first half of the season, they had primetime on the big Saturday kickoff, noon kickoff. They had him on like every, you know, every episode on it. So he's just, you know, it's clicks, it's viewership, it's, you know, because of its primetime. I mean, why do you think he's doing Aflac commercials now, and him and his son are doing for one of the fast food places or something like that? He gets viewers. People want to know what's going on out there, good, bad, or ugly, you know, for what they're doing.
Yeah, I just it makes me cringe. But I mean, I think they'll do better this year. I think they'll win five games, you know, maybe even six. But they're just not the. Just go to ESPN.com, log out of it, go somewhere else, and then go back to ESPN.com, and Colorado's going to pop up in there into your visual somewhere. I mean, it's just so. The big game in the Big Ten, other than Iowa, happened Friday night. And let me tell you, well, I'll tell you what I said during the Iowa game. I said to the guys, I said several things about Fleck. I will love watching Hawks going to grab Floyd. God, will that be glorious. And then I said later, get a TD off a novelty play would be beyond awesome. And I said, suck it, PJ. I just love the look on Fleck's face. I did not see the Illinois-Nebraska game. I was going to try and watch it on Fubo overnight, but I had to get up yesterday early with my wife, so I didn't watch it. But not Matt Rhule so much. I just would have loved seeing the look on Nebraska fans' faces in the crowd. I mean, that had to be glorious, because I'm not sure. The irrationality of Minnesota fans singing We Hate Iowa when they're playing Missouri in the Citrus Bowl years ago, that's pretty bizarre. But Nebraska fans are bizarre. I mean, Nebraska fans can be 3-9, and they are still the most irrational. I mean, those nine losses were all due to poor officiating type stuff. I mean, it's just, did you see the game?
I watched the first half of it, and Dominic Brielle looked good at times. He looked like a true freshman at times. Their defense is not as advertised. I think, you know, Altmyer threw for like 240 or something like that, I think, in the game. So it's one of those things that they're a definite work in progress with what they're doing for both teams. I don't think Illinois is all that great. You know, if you want to stack on top of it, I just think it's, two teams that were ranked and two teams that have a lot of development still to go. And, but the one caveat that I took away from it, and I loved it, was that was the 400 straight sellout with quotes around it, you know, from Nebraska.
Yeah.
We all know they're not really sellouts.
Right.
But they had the one stat that they put on there. They always win at the 50th game each time they win. And then they lost in that one. So,
every 50th home sellout they've won, you mean? Like 50, 100, 150?
Every 50th game that they've sold out during that streak. So that would have been eight straight of the 50, whatever you want to call it. That was a stat that they had to put up on on that was on Big Ten Network, right? They had to put that up. No, that was Fox on Friday night. They had to put that up there. It's 400 straight, and they're going to win because they've won every 50th sellout that they've had during that streak. So, again, pushing the narrative of Nebraska needs to be relevant.
In reality, Raiola's numbers were not bad. I mean, when I say that bad, no TDs. He's 24 of 35 now. A lot of people now are saying, well, our guy's going 18 of 20. Yeah, Northwestern quarterbacks used to do that too, you know. I mean, I don't look at completion percentage as much as I look at things like, you know, yards per attempt, and even that I don't. That can be so skewed, you know. I mean, Rocco Beck against Iowa probably had the QBR of, you know, 2 million, you know, at least in the second half. But, you know, it's season long. That's where, you know, paying off. But, yeah, I think I'm kind of glad we don't play Illinois this year because, one, my brother Tommy seems to think they're a national title contender every year, but I think Bielema is doing stuff there. I think he may not have him to Wisconsin level, but that's only because he doesn't have a Barry Alvarez as his, you know, previous mentor coach at AE. But I think he's going to do good stuff there. I don't think he's ever going to lock down Chicago or lock down Illinois because he doesn't have to, frankly. Everybody talks about locking down your backyard. Yeah, that's kind of important for an Iowa, but. And it was important for Miami in the 80s, but nowadays everything is so national that, you know, guys, just, yeah. I mean, what is Minnesota, I mean, I was talking about how we have Aussie punters. Minnesota's punter, if you saw her last night, is going to be 31 in December.
I did not hear that.
Yeah, he's going to be 31 years old in December. I don't know what exemption.
Miami, was it Cam, whatever his name, that tight end, and he's in his eighth season.
This dude's babysat for Connor McCaffrey, if I'm hearing that right. You know, I mean, Connor McCaffrey is the best 27-year-old point guard in the history of Iowa basketball. But, well, by the way, well, we'll talk about him a little bit. But, I don't think all that lockdown this and lockdown that, it's become so meaningless because with NIL especially. I think Bielema recruits reasonably well. He doesn't appear to be offering everybody that Iowa offers like he used to do. I think he's become his own guy, but I think he's a lot smarter than people give him credit for. You know, he looks like this big fat dude. But I think he's got a good football mind, and I think he's going to do good things in Illinois. It's going to be tough for him to crack the Michigan, Ohio State every year, but I think he's going to do some big stuff. The other big game, of course, Michigan, USC.
Yeah, that was my big, disappointing game of the week this week because Michigan has a huge quarterback issue, and USC still has issues on defense. You know, for me, that's just, they're supposed to be, you know, Michigan's still supposed to be title contender. They're able to run the ball. The defense is playing great, but the two-headed ugly monster that they have at quarterback, and then USC at times looked just so overmatched with the run game from Michigan. It was, you know, but
what was Michigan? Was Michigan running the single wing? It looked like they were, I could not believe it, what I was seeing. This is their passing number, 7 of 12, 32 yards, a QBR of 26.7 for Alex Orgy. Even their running numbers were not exactly huge. I mean, they rushed for 291 yards, you know, big, but. You know, that usually goes alongside, you know, 200 passing yards. So, I mean, they were one-dimensional, literally.
Yeah, that's hugely one-dimensional. They should not have won that game, you know. They should not have. It was just – the interception was huge that they got off of Miller because that was down. Yeah. I think that got returned for a touchdown. You take that off the board, you know, and USC wins that. You know, that was huge for them.
But there's all kinds of things. You take this play off the board, you take that play off the board.
I think
Michigan going Michigan going for it. On fourth and whatever. They had no choice. But I mean, they literally ran the ball. I don't think they passed on that drive. I literally don't think they passed on that drive. And USC had to know they weren't going to pass on that drive because they couldn't pass. And yet, I'm double checking that.
Well, that's why the disappointment on the defense. You know Michigan, it was early and very early that you knew that Michigan was not going to be able to pass the ball. And then to allow them to just keep run the ball down your throat the entire game and lose that way. That's why I had such, you know, USC is my disappointment, you know, in defense-wise. It's just...
But you also have to remember, they're going into Ann Arbor. You can't really say that was expected. I mean, I know a lot of people said they're going to win. But okay, so they did have a pass on there. They did have a pass after they had a false start. They had an incomplete pass. But other than that, they threw two passes on that drive. I mean, that's as bad almost as the eight-minute drive in the Big Ten title game against Michigan State, except that they actually threw the ball a couple times. But, I mean, it's just knowing what they're going to do. I mean, even the passes were token passes. I mean, it's just mind-boggling that USC allowed that to happen to them. So I don't know how you see that. I mean, it's just kind of athletes
and, you know, allowing them to do it. It's USC. They always recruit well. So it's still just a philosophy thing, I think, when it comes down to, you know, how they're trying to play defense. And they needed to poach a good defensive coordinator from the Big Ten. They know how to play Big Ten football, you know, on defense.
Well, again, it goes back to UCLA with Chip Kelly leaving. And wondering how long that was going to, that tells you something that's happening. Games this coming week, nationally, Ohio State, Michigan State, Oregon, UCLA. Wisconsin at USC. Don't know how good. Oklahoma State, Kansas State both coming off losses. Oklahoma going to Auburn. Iowa State, Houston, but Arkansas, Texas A&M could be a good game. Kentucky, Ole Miss could also be a good game. I mean, you just don't, but nationally, nothing really, of course, other than Georgia, Alabama, next Saturday night. Illinois going to Penn State's also a good game.
I was going to say, that's the one. We'll see how good Illinois is in that game because that Penn State offense is pretty juggernaut right now.
But I also don't know that going to Happy Valley, 20 years ago, that was a thing that, you know, you got to go to Happy Valley. Nowadays, sort of, in a way, coming into Kinnick isn't all as dangerous as it used to be. It's still pretty tough, but not like it used to be. But Georgia, Alabama is the one. It's Georgia going to Bama. Jalen Milroe is... I mean, Carson Beck's a great quarterback too, but Jalen Milroe is something else. I mean, he's Jalen Hurts that makes less mistakes. It seems to me.
He's bigger than him, also. He's 6'3", 6'4". It seems like the switch has gone on for him this year. And then Georgia's had a couple of games where he's head scratchers, especially last week in that game. You know, where they had to hold on against Kentucky. You know what I mean? So, 13-12. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
So that could be a lot closer than people think. So.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if Bama opens as the favorite. I don't see a line on it yet, but it won't surprise. Actually, Georgia is a 2.5-point favorite with an over-under of 49.5. God, I don't know. That's a tough one to call. That's a tough one. So, in the Big Ten... We got, I mentioned a couple, Wisconsin, USC, Illinois, Washington, Rutgers. Washington going to Rutgers.
That could be interesting on Friday night, yep.
Yeah. Tough to engage that.
Travel for the Big Ten this year? The Washington record is the longest travel. God, it's got to be. Yeah.
Yeah. It can't. Yeah, it's got to be. Ohio State, Michigan State, as I mentioned. Ohio State is really good. I don't know.
If he had a monster at that today. Running back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As far as Oregon, UCLA, Dylan Gabriel.
Good, but I don't know.
I don't think he's.
Stats are kind of misleading. They've got great stats, but at times the offense it's like they couldn't get it done in the red zone in the few of the early games where they had to, really hold on to win games. And every one of their games except for, who was it, the last game, they could have lost them. So,
yeah. Dylan Gabriel is supposed to be, the Heisman guy. I hardly hear him talked about now. Here's an interesting thing from the Wisconsin-USC game. You look at the stat, they talk about who's leading both teams in stats. Passing, USC. Rushing, USC. Receiving, Wisconsin. I mean, that's a twist. Minnesota-Michigan, I don't know that Minnesota isn't a bit deflated at this point after last night. I think at halftime, PJ was... It had to be thumping his chest.
Well, if we can run for what we did against them, what's Michigan going to do?
Exactly. Nebraska-Purdue, that one, I think Nebraska will recover. Maryland-Indiana is going to be good because you don't know how good Maryland might be. They always have a lot of talent, but rather undisciplined. Indiana is four-wheel.
I'm still taking it with a grain of salt on Indiana because you got to look at the body of work on who they played. FIU, Western Illinois, and we know that UCLA is horrible, and then Charlotte. Yeah. So I got to put a grain of salt on buying in on that.
But going out to UCLA and hanging 42. And hold them to 13. That's a tough road trip on the best of the year. So Penn State Illinois is probably the most interesting game of the conference. Yeah, the marquee. Yeah, I would say it would be the marquee. We're off, and so that kind of presents a nice break before the
going into the
big going to the. So let's talk Hawkeyes yesterday. Let's go to the special teams. Anything ugly on special teams that jumped out?
No, I mean, Reese is getting better by the punt. I mean, he averaged 29.5. So and the last one was the one that took him under 50, and that's just because we had moved a little bit, and he had to kind of angle it to keep them deep. So Reese is looking great. Stevens has really, people are saying he had the yips last year at the end of the game, end of the season when he got pulled because he kept kicking it out of bounds on the kickoffs. So I think he's really got his
I think he also got strong. I think he just got tired last year. he was kicking off a lot because he was kicking a lot of field goals. I think his head is a little more on straight, like you said. But I think he's probably gotten a little stronger. The only thing I saw is the punt return.
I'm sorry. What the 46-yarder that he hit? That 46-yarder that he hit last night probably had 10 or 15, at least 10 yards on it. So he's definitely stronger than he was last year.
And I think 55 is probably something where that's a real question in a big game that you got to decide, hey, maybe we just take these 3 points with his leg.
We talked about it 2 weeks ago, Iowa State game. We know Cade couldn't get it to the end zone.
But that was going to be six. I did a little bit. It was going to be 67 yards, and it was into the wind. Now, I mean, you can argue that Cade's pass was short, but still, it was into the wind, so. The one really good punt return we had, and of course got called back. I think
And, of course, P.J. Hall was the guy that did the illegal block on that one. I mean, the guy, I put it in our text group last night. The guy's a walking miscue right now. I don't know what happened to him, but he's just he's going to make a mistake at every turn.
That's the question.
I think he has the potential to look good and be strong, but I mean, more to the point, where's Nestor? Is he playing at all? I haven't heard his name at all.
He's not on special teams. Special teams, and then that last drive he played when they put their backups and we put our backups in for Minnesota. So
Nothing really bad on special. What I would say good on special teams, our kickoff coverage was really, really good.
Really good.
Our coverage was good because Reese was getting elevation, but our kickoff coverage, you know, they were taking, you know, I think that guy other than one, every other, you know, that was clearly a touchback. I think he tried several times, and I don't think he ever got to the
6 yards deep. Yeah.
Yeah. He never got to the 25. So that's a plus. And of course, the punting was Reese was, like you said, he's getting better by the punt. Anything you saw that jumped out that was really good on special teams?
I just love that we are back to the consistency that we had last year with, you know, on the punting game. And it's now a weapon again. We had the question mark. I mean, it still could regress a little bit just because, you know, this is, again, that was his fourth game as a punter ever in his life. So I see progress across everything. We're not giving up any returns. We're not giving up on both punting and kickoff returns. You know, Stevens, that was his first field goal he's kicked, I think, the whole season. And that
no,
was,
didn't
you know,
he
that
have,
was
didn't he have, didn't he have two against Iowa State?
Oh, yeah, he did. Well, I guess big kicks, like long kicks that were,
right.
you know,
okay, I got you.
Over the 40 mark. So.
Right.
So
Let's go to defense. What did you see that just made you cringe last night?
First half, just hitting, no arm tackling, you know, lapping up. Everybody was just kind of hitting people. Like that touchdown for that put him up 14-7 on us. That was just bouncing off of him, and then he spun and he went in the end zone. We should have had him stopped for. You know,
he shouldn't have even gotten the first down, let alone the touchdown.
I mean, I was screaming at the TV. I'm like, wrap up, wrap up, wrap up. And everybody was doing it. They were just hitting, and they were bouncing off of us and getting more yardage. That was the ugly part of the defense in that first half.
I mean, we were getting scorched a bit because I think we were telegraphing. I think it was easy for them to spot where the soft spots were. Even when we were in man coverage, we weren't pressed up. We were giving way much cushion. In that first half, it was like, what the hell? The second half is a completely different story, but as was the offense. But I mean, it just seemed to. At the beginning, it was like, God, we're letting them throw all over it. You know, running-wise, it looked like they broke a couple tackles. But beyond that, they didn't gouge us. They didn't gash us for anything in the run game. So we weren't getting any pressure. Brosmer was, you know, winding his watch back there, I mean, for all the time he had. It was terrible. I mean, we had one, you know, that – play that got the interception for Higgins that led to the touchdown. That was about the bright spot in the first half for the defense. Now the second half, man, I'm not even sure where to begin. I'll let you begin since I don't know where to begin. What did you see in that suddenly just turned?
We started bringing linebackers. Jackson was laying a lot of blitzes right up the middle. He got the sack off of the one with that. So I think it took what you were talking about, the no comfort, I mean, the comfort that Brosmer had in that first half, it took it away, and you started seeing a lot of high passes, low passes. We were getting it from the line. We still didn't really get the pressure from the line, but that's what really ratcheted up
the line got more pressure, and you noticed they started stunting a lot more. from the
Max was on it, two or three really good stunts they had.
Yeah, exactly. So that, they started stunting both Luella and Herquette were doing that. Interior was, to me, it was just solid. And that's why they didn't do it very well in the run. But I mean, I just everything. But here's what I took away. This was where I really thought we were playing. It looked like you could say we were playing a 4-3, but Castro was our linebacker, but he was playing in coverage. I mean, the first half, every time a receiver caught a ball where Castro was in the neighborhood, Castro was deep on the guy. He was giving up catches in front of him, but he was playing. You know, suddenly I don't remember a single, even on a completed pass, I don't remember a single play where Castro wasn't in front of the receiver. I don't know if that was Phil, if it was Castro himself that saw something or what, but in general, we disguised our coverages in and of itself. I mean, they were one or two in the second half, but for the most part, they weren't splitting our zones. They weren't finding the soft spot. I mean, our guys were playing up, but I think I think Grossman was confused as much as anything, because I think he was getting up there and saying, this is a different coverage. They're not, the safeties weren't necessarily playing up. I mean, first half we had single high safeties. Safeties were friggin' 27 yards off the friggin' ball. I'm like, what in the hell?
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, and in the second half, we had a couple of times where we just had a single high safety, 15 yards off the ball, and everybody was on the line, even the linebackers.
Yeah.
So it was they were definitely showing them a lot of different, looks in that second half. And you're right, that really, confused Rossner.
Yeah.
I think Minnesota has some forces offensively, but I think we – I was thinking, how is Phil going to adjust to this? Because he's just getting torched. And I never would have guessed that as much as the offense looks better, I never would have guessed the defense would also do that. I mean, they just something clicked last night in that second half where they just suddenly, this is over. We're not doing this anymore.
And they gave up 222 in the first half, and then we gave up 66 yards in the second half.
We were talking about it in our text chat. I mean, Grossman just didn't have time, but he also, even when he did have time, he didn't seem to know where he was going with the ball or where he needed to go with the ball. And that had, that's coverage as much as anything. But I think, we weren't dropping our linebackers as much as we do, but I also think we saw less of our – I think we saw a lot more of Nick Jackson and Jay Higgins in the second half. We weren't scrubbing them out as much. I think Castro was playing more of a cornerback or something. He just was not
true. Yeah, that true cash position where he seems like sometimes he was doing way too much backing up and being out of position early in the game,
he was playing safety. Previously, and last night he wasn't. In the second half, he certainly wasn't. I mean, he was in front of the ball almost every time. But that was where I noticed. What I'm saying, I'm not saying he was playing poorly. I think where he was playing was totally different in the second half. So he just seemed like I never saw him behind the. I didn't see a receiver making a catch in front of him, and that was. That's huge. I mean, it's,
100%.
Suddenly, a fairly easy dump-off pass is no longer there. And I think that's part of what confused Max Grossman. I think Max Grossman is a good quarterback, actually. I think he showed that last night. He is definitely, he's moving over, and you're saying, well, he came over from New Hampshire. Well, he's obviously good enough to play in the Big Ten, so.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so on to the offense. I don't even know where to begin in the first half, other than that touchdown drive. But I don't know what to. I mean, I just. Is it play calling? Is it.
I think it's play calling to some extent. Because we did a lot of different things in the second half than we did in the first half. They looked totally different in offense. And I think we bought into the all the press about how good their pass was, you know, pass defense was with the 9 interceptions coming in, and we were keeping everything really close to the line. And a lot of I'm tired of that rollout to the tight end for 1 yard.
That's been a
whole season with that.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, in the second half, when we did that rollout to the tight end, that's when I knew we were going to win. Believe it or not, our first play in the second half, that's when I knew we were going to win. Because I was like, okay, something got figured out because that went for big yards, and we just didn't seem to even have that. I mean, I don't know, but yeah. Also, VanderZee looked. Now he had that great play in the second half, but I mean, he looks like he is kind of. Not here in the headlines, but I don't know if the confidence issue.
He's a freshman wall a little bit.
Yeah.
Our wide receivers were kind of rough in general, except for Gill. I mean, but they didn't go to him enough, you know. A lot of drop passes in that first half, too. That should have been for decent games. And I think that was the bad or the ugly for me in the game was for the offense was just – the wide receivers weren't helping Cade that much.
No,
you know, tight ends were the, you know, the kind of go-to for the offense on the pass game. So,
there was three catches
for 9 yards. Come on.
There was a play near the end of the first half before Johnson got a couple of big runs. They went to Weegan downfield. You could argue that the pass was slightly overthrown. It really wasn't. Weegan got his hands on it, and he needed to make that catch. But I think that kind of showed that, there's some room there. And then once we, I don't know what it was, because the play to VanderZee was kind of an outlier in the sense that we almost didn't need it, but it was a big play at the time. But, I mean, we opened up something offensively. One, I think we were pulling a lot more. Did you notice that touchdown? I think it was, where Ostrenga's call was overturned, catch was overturned.
And after
I looked at that again about six times, I finally decided it's probably not a bad overturn. I mean,
it could go on either way.
The Minnesota catch not being overturned is more surprising than Ostrenga's catch. Being overturned in a sense, but at the same time, man, you know, it says the ground can't make the catch. Well, the ground didn't really make the catch for him, I don't think. But
no.
I could argue that, I mean, I don't know how they could overturn it, you know, and say it's 100% conclusive, but whatever. But after that play, we ran that. It wasn't a draw. It was more like a counter. But did you know, if you look, go back and look at it, We pulled our guard, and I think we pulled one of the tight ends, in addition to, Terrell Washington, they said he made a decleater block. It wasn't, he got killed on it, but he made a big block, but, There was room there, I mean, that could have been an 80-yard gain. I mean, it was wide open.
Well, I just like the concept of it. You went no backs in the backfield, got up the line, pulled him in, so it kind of confused them because we hadn't really done anything like that where we had, you know, Johnson or anybody split out wide and then bringing him back in, and it's the defense was just almost frozen from it. And then, like you said, the pulling with it, it just – that was no, we can't run it all the time, but that was a great play.
Yeah, it was.
But we were pulling more. The kickout stuff that Johnson was running, we ran it a couple times. But I mean, he was as dangerous inside as he was outside. But that one play, that counter was beautiful because it was just like I said, we pulled guys. The misdirection was. Fantastic. That kind of showed me as well. Where was that the first half, though? And I'm wondering, are we kind of using that first half to learn? Because, I mean, you can do that against Minnesota.
You can do it against Troy. You should be able to do it against Iowa State. You can't do that against Ohio State. Because Ohio State will ruin the halftime up 45 to nothing, you know, type deal. So you know, we're not going to be able to learn in the second, you know, in the first half. We're going to have to.
Yeah, you can't. Have, you got to be on or you're out.
Yeah. I thought Cade looked. I mean, his numbers weren't very good, but like you said, his the receivers weren't helping him that much, and the wide receivers weren't. But by the same token, I think he still showed some good poise. I'd still like to see some more packages for Brendan Sullivan, but you know that second touch, that second touchdown, the tying touchdown. Cade was actually, you know, that was a 15-yard play. Cade was still in at that point, so I don't know when. I guess Sullivan isn't necessarily the red zone quarterback. He might just be the inside
he's
the 10-yard line.
I think is where, yeah.
Yeah. But Cade was out throwing the block there. I mean, he's looking like Nate Stanley on that one, running interference. I also, you know, the wide receivers weren't helping, but, yeah, the play calling just seemed – I mean, Minnesota was getting there with pressure. Even Caleb wasn't lighting it up for, you know, he had a couple big runs, but he also had a lot of, you know, stuff at the line type stuff. That first touchdown drive where he definitely did go out of bounds if he looked at it slowly on replay and all that stuff. But, you know, when he gets outside, he's very tough to stop. He's very tough, you know, even at one point, he ran out of bounds, kind of knowing that he wasn't going to break it. But he's tough to stop when he gets outside. So they broke that. But they had a lot of, I don't know. They've got. I mean, as much as going to him the second half was huge, man, it seems like even when we run play action to him, Cade doesn't seem to sell it that well. So at least in the first half, he wasn't.
Yeah.
I just wasn't, you know. I wasn't all that impressed. So, but boy, that second half when Cade bootlegged it and threw it to Ostrenga, I knew right then and there, oh, well, something got figured out because that play wasn't there in the first half somehow, and it went for yards that it had no business going for. I mean, I didn't think. I thought, God, how'd that get, you know, 20 yards or whatever it was, and so. That's when I actually felt good.
Yeah. No, I mean, I was worried. I'll be honest. I was worried coming into out of the halftime. I'm like, what are we going to do? Are we going to see more of the same? And like you said, when they had that drive, I'm like, all right, they're not going to just do the same old offense of like trying to, you know, let the defense hold it, try to figure out a play or two to get into it. It was great to see the offense just have some fun out there. And that's where I think they weren't having any type of fun in that first half, you know, the way they were doing things. Cause I think they were frustrated with the play calling. It was, I don't know. I just,
Is LaShawn Williams out? Cause he obviously played nothing last night.
Yeah. Seth Anderson were out when they announced it right before the game, an hour or two before the game, that they were going to be out.
Seth Anderson played.
He was off the field last week against Troy, they said also.
Yeah. Has Seth Anderson played at all this year?
No. I think it's the hamstring again from what I've heard. Yeah. The same issue he had for most of last year.
And did Kamari Moulton see the field at all? I don't remember seeing him.
No, it was a two-man show at running back for us, so.
That's interesting to me that he did not, you know, didn't somehow.
Well, did we see him again last week after, remember that one bell ringer he got, and then they went into concussion, concussion protocol?
I didn't realize they went into concussion protocol.
He got a bell ringer last week, and then I think maybe they were just, you know, being on the safe side with him.
Yeah. Now, go back to some of the not so good. I mean, 11 of 19, those numbers, you know, 62 yards. Again, yes, you can say there were some drops and stuff. But on the other hand, only throwing the ball 19 times. We didn't need to, and we just absolutely torched them for, we had 15 negative yards, and one of those was a virtual, forfeit by Brendan Sullivan at the end of the one, we turned it over on downs. I mean, that was, that's almost 300 yards again that we ran for, Gill and Weechen getting the Gill's was more of a jet sweep. Weechen's was more of a reverse. And decent didn't look hideous.
Weechen's had to make your heart stop for a second.
Yeah.
And that the actual pitch or whatever you want to call it was a little bit questionable on Cade.
Yeah. That's just some defensive stuff. Sean Lee with eight tackles last night.
Why isn't he even playing more?
Yeah.
I mean, Jay Higgins, he kept everything in front of him.
Absolutely. Jay Higgins, nine tackles, an interception. Nick Jackson, two passes defended, eight tackles.
And a sack.
You just can't say enough about those guys, what they did. We're going to miss those guys next year.
Yeah.
Any way you look at it. Carson Shire, Tyler Fisher, Jackson Rexroth, those are all good, good potential, but I don't see them doing quite as much. But we got some other guys out there. Zach Tweet was out there for a bit. We've got some potential, but I just, we didn't. But here's an interesting stat, though. Max Malone had no tackles last night.
But he had a pass deflection.
But no tackles. I mean, and he stunted a lot. He brought pressure, but no actual tackles. I mean, that is kind of weird. To me, it is.
There's going to be somebody that steps up every week. It's not going to be the same person every week. I don't think we have that kind of personnel. Think it's mostly going to be, who's just kind of hitting. You look at Ethan Herkett, stellar in the run game, last night. Five, tackles, half a tackle for, a loss. I mean, he really helped set the line. On his side he's on the right side of the defense and really, shut down that run game. I mean, they didn't run for anything in that game for the most part, 21 carries for 79 yards. So,
their per carry 3.8. I mean, that's not
hideous.
That's
horrible,
for Minnesota, it is. I mean, Can you imagine if we did that against Wisconsin every time we played them, held them to 3.8 yards of carry? God,
we never lose one.
Yeah, there'd be a statewide holiday that week each time. I mean, and Minnesota's somewhat similar to Wisconsin in that usually they are pretty formidable in running the ball and have a bit against us numerous times. So to do that last night was. I think what it boiled down to was that we knew we could contain their run game, and so all we had to do really was let's disguise our pass coverages. Let's bring our guys, let's bring some of our guys up tighter and just don't give it away that easy. And that's what I think, because they already knew that, look, they're not going to gash us on the ground, so. But maybe that's what it was, and maybe that's why they saw it. Because to me, there were a couple missed tackles on runs that I thought, even on that one fourth down they converted, I thought, God, we had them. Jamari Harris had them, but, Darius Taylor's. That might have been major, but they're good at making, not necessarily making guys miss, but they're much like KJ has done this year. The second effort is there. They're good running backs, and they're playing in Minnesota for a reason. But by the same token, I think that's what happened is that Phil and Seth Wallace and whoever else said, look, this is not, they're not going to gash us on the ground. I mean, I assume Phil. Seth and probably Kelton Copeland said, look, the run game's not a problem. So let's change our coverages a bit.
Make them one-dimensional, which they did.
Yeah, let's get our pressure going a little bit more, and that's what they did. Yeah, exactly what they did. So, but as much as, you know, the offense deserves its credit, too. I mean, they both do, for the adjustments they made. I don't know, though, why they weren't doing some of the stuff. And, I mean, on the defensive side, you can kind of see it because you're not expecting Minnesota to be the passing team. So from the offensive standpoint, why were we not doing some of that stuff in the first half? I don't know. I really don't. Jazz Patterson only averaged 3.5 yards or 3.7 yards a carry.
Duty at the end. I mean, he had a couple great runs. But they know we're going to run the ball. He's given the ball. But the one thing I love about Jazz Patterson, man, is every time he touches the ball, always falls forward for positive yardage. He never gets stopped in the backfield unless the play is completely blown up. Yeah. But, like, at the line, he's always falling for a yard or two. I love that.
Well, even when he gets met at the line, man, he's explosive to the hole. I mean, he's out of control maybe sometimes, still a little bit, but he's explosive to the hole. And so the guy that meets him at the line is going to feel it. I mean, he definitely will. I think if we were to stay with his two-headed monster for the rest of the season, and with the occasional, if for whatever reason LaShawn and Kamari Moulton aren't available, don't know that. But, I mean, I think we have guys like Max White that could probably – step up and be serviceable.
Washington can always come back and play.
Yeah, exactly. And so there is that. But frankly, I think that the line run blocking is not our problem. Even though there are plays that are maybe run blocking is not our problem. Our run blocking is fine, even if it sometimes doesn't, get their signals mixed or they don't do enough pulls or whatever. Our run blocking is fine. Our pass blocking, I think whether it's Cade or Brendan Sullivan, we're going to have to rely a lot more on rollouts for some reason. Cade did get better protection in the second half and was able to get some short completions. I don't know how we're going to take the top off of defense right now without some – And maybe it's coordination with all personnel. It's not just a matter of the line. Cade's got to get in better sync with the receivers as well. But you can't.
My argument to that is you've got to try. We're still not trying to go downfield. Everything is in that intermediate or short pass range. Because even yesterday or even just on the season, we've only taken a couple of shots downfield. Last night was 20 yards down the field, that one, but there was no others the rest of the game, So it's not, you can't get good at it or do it unless you try. And I just see dinking and dunking. And that's the only complaint I have about the offense is, we need explosive plays, and we're getting them from one side of the offense. We got to start getting it from the pass side of it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be 5 a game like we're getting on the run. 1 or 2 makes the running game even that much better, because then you're not having safeties, on every play coming down into the box, and that just makes the running that much tougher. So you just got to at least have the threat and trying 2 or 3 times a game to stretch the defense.
Well, I'll tell you the other thing, though, one of the other ways you can sort of open up the box, and this is where Caleb Johnson's talent comes in, is when he breaks outside, he makes you respect, they can't bunch for the middle. They've got to spread it out a little bit, even when they're playing close to the line. He spreads it out enough. That helps. So that could be part of what happened in the second half as well. They said, look, we don't have to throw downfield so much, because this is where they're vulnerable. This is what we, let's do some more.
I always thought that we just need to do that. I'm saying, because we have. It's got to be an evolution of the offense, Going 11 of 19 for 62 yards, and then what was it, 20 of 24 last week for 170. 40-plus passes in two games and you have less than just over 200 yards of passing, that's just, you know what I'm saying, the numbers don't lie in that situation that you're not trying to stretch the defense. You're using it very, very complementary to the offense, and a lot of it is kind of like run plays, like the swing out pass, you know, the rollout pass to the tight ends are definitely, you know, that's an extension of the run game. So it's just one of these, like next week, I mean, for the Ohio State game, you almost have to try to, you know, surprise them with some stuff downfield to make you give yourself a chance in that game. Otherwise, they know we're going to be, everything's going to be 10 yards and shorter on pass, and you're going to try to run it down their throat.
I'm not sure. Everybody keeps saying Ohio State defense is the real deal this year. We hear that every year. And I'm not saying they aren't good. But, I mean, we hear every year, this is the year that their defense is the real deal. And I'm not saying we're going to light them up. I hardly think we will. But, you know, who would have thought, you know, other than Stanley having the game of his life. But, I mean, you know, don't forget that game Wadley also had over 100 yards. I mean, James Butler had that big run. I mean, there are things that you know, if we execute well in the running game, that will ease the short passing game, but will ease the, you know, passes to the tight ends. I mean, I just don't think we're going to be. We can't rely on, okay, let's just keep trying downfield. We can't do that. That's not going
to
work.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it just needs to be at least attempted. I'm saying. That's the issue.
Absolutely.
We're not attempting it. It's very much a complimentary passing offense. It's not at least trying to get something for them. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It just needs to be a little bit, hey, we will throw on you. Remember that type of a pass game.
Yeah.
You know, we'll throw deep on you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, sort of like back in
2015, remember Nebraska would fight back and get a score, and then it was just like Canterbury off tackle, slam, 40-yard touchdown or whatever it was, and it was like, that was just Kirk telling Nebraska, okay, keep scoring, so will we, you know. I mean, and I think that's what we have to kind of do that. We have to kind of say, look, okay, you know, crowd the box, fine. We'll go downfield. You know, will it work every time? No. But the point is, all it has to do is work once or make the threat. And, you know, even the play, to, which was an intentional underthrow, I'm pretty sure, to Vandersee that drew the pass interference. I mean, a play like that, you know, just going to your wide receiver, not using your tight ends all the friggin' time, you know. I mean, that's just that threat has to be. But, I mean, you look at our numbers. Ostrenga, two catches. Vandersee, one catch. Lache, three catches. Jacob Gill, one catch. Abel Large had two catches. I mean, you know, I mean, that's got to, you know. But again, 11 throw or 11 receptions, dang, you know.
Well, and then considered to be our most dynamic wide receiver, only had one thrown to him with, you know, with Brown. You know,
right.
So what's, you know, that's the thing. We're not getting it, I mean, we're getting it to playmakers, but we're not, you know, including all of our playmakers. You know, with Caleb Brown, I mean, no, we know we had to sit out the first game, but, I mean, he's had, what, has he had a catch yet this year? Maybe one catch? And maybe four attempts to him in his three games so far since he's come back. So, I'm just saying, it's utilize your weapons, and that we are to an extent, but we're leaving out, you know, that the things could take the explosive play for us. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, that's all I'm saying. I don't need, you know, drop back 40 times and, you know, getting 300 yards passing and, you know, having four 40 yards, you know, receptions. I just want to just have the threat of the, in the back of your mind that you have to worry about that.
One early successful deep pass will keep them honest the rest of the game. I mean, they have
to
be at that point.
One in each half. I'm happy with it.
I don't know. Is Jacob Gill just not a deep threat, or is he a product of Northwestern system, so he plays, system type?
I think they're trying to use him as almost like a Swiss Army knife in the passing game, you know, because he does the jet sweeps. He does the,
He had the big pass play against Illinois State where he split the safety in the corner for the touchdown. That was 40-some yards. But everything else has been a lot of, you know, intermediate over the middle. And I think he's the one wide receiver they trust that you get the ball in his radius, he's going to catch it. Because I don't think he's had a drop yet if it was catchable. So I think they're trying to use him where, you know, he's best in the game. But I don't think he has an issue with, you know, speed or being from a, you know, like you said, coming in with a set skill set from, you know, playing at Northwestern. I just think they're trying to utilize him the best they can.
I really think maybe using Sullivan more for Cade to get a feel of the game, a feel of the flow. It's great that they're bringing him in on those situational things, but I think they need to get him a series. Earlier on to let Cade see, you know, this isn't punishment. This is viewership time, you know. I mean,
but the thing that sucks about that is the time has passed to do that. That should have been Troy. That should have been Illinois State. Those are the games that we should have.
That doesn't have to be. I think they took part out last night. He competed in camp, so I think he's ready. I don't think that time is necessarily passed. I think it's time to utilize it is what it is. I mean, I just think he's his skill set's different. It keeps a defense honest. It's like, okay, what do we expect here? Even Cade last night, that first play of the second half. Normally when Cade's rolling out, it almost seems like it's kind of a nothing else is working, let's roll him out type stuff. But last night, it was a very well-designed rollout to the tight end, and it just worked to perfection. And so I think I think we've got to be able to have plays like that that either quarterback can execute. And that's why I say, you know, bringing him in doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to, okay, we're going more, you know, this or more RPO. No, it doesn't necessarily mean at all. It's to give the defense a different perspective, you know, a different threat matrix and a different a way for Cade to see what's going on and whatever, and just to know that, yeah, okay, we're ready with either guy. And that's got to be, I think that's especially given that Cade is still, I mean, now he got pulled down last night, and I thought, oh shit, but no, he got up fine. He seems fine. I don't think he's, you know, an injury waiting to happen right now, like he would have thought at the beginning of the season, but I still don't think he's as mobile as Brendan Sullivan is. And so I think you just, you know, maybe take advantage of that at times.
But Cook's old school, you know, and I think he has the mindset, if you have two quarterbacks, you have none. So I don't think he has stretched a little bit on that philosophy with having, you know, Sully come in and play inside the 10. But I think that was a product of, you know, how inept the offense was inside the 10 against Iowa State. But again,
who's running the offense? I don't think Kirk is micromanaging the offense like people think. You know,
and I think he has the choice on the quarterback. He does. I think that's where he would micromanage it. I mean, who to keep in? I mean, that's been apparent for many years. On, you know, you can go back all the way to Christensen and Stansy, you know, flip flopping between the two quarterbacks to see who's the best. I mean, I think he still has a big say on that part of it, the quarterback wise, on who's going to play and who's going to start. But again, because you can see it. I mean, last, you know, Petras 2 years ago, you know, everybody was calling for Padilla, and the only time Padilla played was when Petras was out. So, I do think that's the only part you can put away all the talk that it's his system. You have to play what he says. I think he put that away, but I do think he definitely says who starts on at the quarterback position, who he trusts, or in his gut that he trusts.
I don't know how he couldn't trust Sully at this point, though. I think Sully is definitely, you know, shown that he is, you know. Indy pointed something out. Zero turnovers, one penalty. That's pretty, as he said, Kirk will be happy with that. Kind of hard for him not to be. That was, you know, I think we had none last week against Troy as well. I mean, you know, they said, oh, PJ's probably getting in the referee. You know, frankly, I'm not all that, I try to be nice about PJ Fleck. I try to be,
I can't.
I just don't find him likable.
You saw the post-game handshake.
Was very quick and matter of fact.
We know Kirk doesn't like him. The PJ is just – look at in the first half when his center had – he flinched, and he's in the ref's ear, like, yelling at him, like, no. Defense – your guy flinched, and our guy's moved on him. So, yeah, I mean, PJ is just – I wouldn't buy a used car from him. That's how I feel about him.
Yeah. I think used car being the operative word. He has a fault up there.
That's what I said. I was saying it last night.
Yeah, he definitely, that was definitely. That's why I said I really wanted us to be. Gosh, almost like running gimmick plays at the end, just to throw it at him. But I guess Kirk. That's where Kirk is old school as well. He's not about to.
You're harking back to the 2020 season when he called the three timeouts to try to stop them from being able to score, to blank them. So that's the Kirk I wanted to see in that second half. And we did for the most part. It's like, screw this. The pig's coming home with us.
I still wonder.
I keep thinking back to the Minnesota play that did not get overturned. I know I'm obsessing about it, and I probably shouldn't, but are we getting snake bit on some of that stuff? I mean, take an example. There was that late hit on KJ out of bounds, and a couple of people would go, oh, that seems petty, but it was clearly there was one of those in the first half. There was another one in addition to the one on KJ in the second half, and I'm thinking, look, I'm under no illusion that refs aren't out to get Iowa and all that stuff. But at the same time, do they sometimes, I don't know. It just seems like they missed some stuff. And the overturned call that should have, Ostrander's got overturned. Theirs didn't. And somebody pointed out, if that play happens in the middle of the field, Do they call it a fumble? No, they call it an incomplete pass. Because remember, if you saw, he actually dropped the ball later in that catch. The Minnesota guy did. Would they have called it a fumble on the middle of the field? No, they wouldn't have. They would have called it an incomplete pass and said, "Oh no, not a fumble."
The ball moved as his first foot was in, but as he stepped out of bounds, the ball moved, and then the ball fell out of his hands.
Yeah.
So the out of bounds is still a continuation of the field. It is part of the play. So why was it not looked at in that sense? The ball shifted as he touched the inbounds. As he stepped out of bounds, he still didn't have full control of it, and then the ball fell out. It should have been an incompletion. It's continuation of motion in that situation.
Yeah. But somehow, I don't know. Because it's in Minnesota, what's going to happen in Columbus? On the other hand, do you really want to hang every game on having to beat them? Some people say, play better so that the refs don't matter. Well, last year, you can't say that the refs didn't matter. That's what I wonder. I just wonder. But I don't know, maybe I'm harping on that, and that's why. But that's part of why I hate PJ, because, Kirk's gotten mad in the past about calls, but he's not in there near every play, I mean, he's actually managing the whole thing. He's not micromanaging the officials like PJ seems to do.
A couple of games I watched yesterday, and this is on the officiating part, what we're talking about, and a lot of the announcers were talking about how bad the officiating has been so far this season. But Joel Klatt was like, I'm getting ready to lose it because there was like many questionable calls in his game. And so I think across the board, the officiating has been pretty poor this year. And I'm not saying against Iowa. I'm just talking about in all the games. I watch a ton of college football games. And there has been a lot of questions like, what are you seeing in that case? And very clear cut, even reviews that should have gone the other way or been reversed, and they're just
play as fans, you know, they don't, they go that easy out with it. You know, they're not saying confirmed or, you know, you're saying, as, you know, play as called or as fans, however they say it. So Fishman is way down this year.
Yeah, the play stands as called
or whatever, however they say it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just don't think the officiating is just, it just seems really off to me. And constantly. I mean, like they can't seem to get it right at all. And it's, you know, how is this happening? You know, I mean, but you know, like, how are they seeing it like this? I don't get that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how they can say that one's a catch, the other's not. And it's just, I don't know. It just doesn't seem. It's not a conspiracy. I mean, that's crazy to think.
Oh,
no, it's a definite conspiracy against me.
No,
that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying it just seems to be a general incompetence, I think, maybe. You know.
It's both ways. It's not one team that's getting all the calls in a game. It's going against both teams, and it's an inconsistency on games the way they're being called.
I thought you said something more, and I missed it. Okay.
It's an inconsistency, you know.
Yeah, it's totally that. And it makes you wonder, are they not doing continuing education or whatever it is we're supposed to? Are they not doing that? Is there a reason that guys are not getting, you know, I mean, I didn't think that was actually a roughing the. I mean, yes, it was. It was running into the kicker. I'll say that. But it didn't. It didn't seem like to me that was that egregious a call or that egregious a hit. I know you're not supposed to think that way.
I mean, I'll say it. It was more of a flop on Reese. You know, I'll give it to him. Great acting job.
Yeah. How do they miss some of the stuff they miss? It just didn't seem to me like that was kind of ticky-tack. But by the way, I'll take it.
It's a drain of talent. It's a drain of talent in that pool. If you notice, there's a lot younger groups of officiating that we've had in almost all the games you've watched. I think a lot of them are making the jump to, you know, the other leagues. There's so many leagues around now for football that I think, you know, a lot of them are making the jump to the NFL or they're, you know, they've made the jump to, I mean, it doesn't coincide with the college season, but like the, whatever they're calling it, the UFL or whatever it is, the USFL that league. So I think it's a drain of talent.
Where's that one ref who called the call against Michigan? We were too rough on the guy, you know, basically.
Roughing the center?
No. The girl, when we played Michigan. That was mean, type deal almost, it was called unnecessary roughness. And it was like, really, a guy's not allowed to block anymore? I mean, it was kind of scary.
They didn't even call it like a backside block or anything, or blindside block or whatever they call it. It was just excessive force or something. It was crazy on what they called it.
What was that one call years ago? They always talk about it on. He was giving him the business. That's almost what she called, but she wasn't even sure what to call it. I mean, so where is she? I haven't seen her. I mean, did they finally bounce her? I mean, I can't imagine that the powers that be would have allowed that. You know, like, hell no, we got to keep her.
I don't pay much attention to who's reffing the game unless it's bad. I guess it's been bad this year to some extent, but no, I haven't.
I just wondered where she is. It's like, yeah, well, we got to worry about her still. It just seems that the officiating overall, and again, I hate to have that be the thing. I mean, it's such a stupid thing to hang your hat on every week. But by the same token, you know, when's it going to come back? When's it going to come in and bite us? You know, I mean, are we going to have to always deal with that now? I mean, we shouldn't, but by the same token, we seem to. It's like, well, okay, then here comes another bad call, you know, and that to me just seems to make it almost not fun to watch the game, but it's not that. It's because I'll watch the game no matter what, and I'll never watch pro over college or anything like that. That's, you know, but it just it seems like we're talking about it. I feel like it's being talked about every game anymore. You know, like what about this call? What about that call? You know.
Yeah, that's the consistency is gone. There's no, you know, there. I think sometimes they call stuff to be careful, like the targeting, and then allowing the boost, and that's been good. I'm happy about that because there's been a lot of times they've missed it. And you can't go back. So might as well call it and we can pick it up. But then there's other stuff that's just, it's so blatant and it's right in front of them. And it's like they're watching the play and not watching what's going on, you know, within the play. Yeah. Like they're captivated by watching the player that's got the ball in their hands instead of what they're supposed to be watching. Their assignment is what I think. Yeah. It's like they're almost like more fans than referees.
There's something to that, but it's also, I don't know, I know there's continuing education and all that, whatever they call it, but at a certain point, are we not going to review these guys at all? I mean, it's like, can we never, you can't get back from a targeting call. But by the same token, you know, at a certain point, they got to be allowed to get back to from something. I mean, it seems to me that there's so much that they can do better. I guess. I mean, the missed. I think there's another facet that I'm overlooking, and that's probably a timing aspect. They don't want to spend. Okay, we're not going to spend 26 minutes dissecting.
Beating up the game.
Stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know. But then look at. I mean, I guess my I look at the difference between the Ostrenga overturn and the Minnesota non overturn. It seems to me that those weren't treated equally. You know what I mean? Now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe
that,
you know. Yeah.
What you need to do, Hank, is you need to reach out to the NASO, the National Association of National Association of Officials.
Sports officials.
Yeah, that's who you need to reach out to. You become one, or ask why aren't you being consistent?
Yeah. I'm not gonna be volunteered to become one. That's for sure. but that's the thing. You know, people say, well, you know, that's always an argument. Oh, could you do it better? Well, I'm not sure I could do it worse. And it would seem to me that these guys who are getting paid a lot and who's, putting these things on the line. I know. I realize this is, you know, this is not life or death. Come on, you know, let's be real. But by the same token, there's a lot of money being bet, and that's probably
what I was going to say.
That's probably one issue with it.
This is a multi-billion-dollar sport now compared to what it was just 10. I mean, it was a billion-dollar sport 10 years ago, you know, but it is multi-billion-dollar sport. And if you're not putting a product out that pleases the masses, which includes the officiating of the game, that's when somebody's going to have – the conferences are going to have to step up and say something or, you know, something has to be done to just, you know, like I said, it's consistency. I'm not looking – for everything to be called, but it's consistent within a game. And if you're calling, you know, egregious things and not missing them.
I guess that's one aspect of it. And really, is it too much to ask, though, that
guys, I mean, that's held to account, because if you do that, you're never going to get officials that are interested, you know, people that are going to be interested. But you know what? It seems to me you already have guys that are always enough interested because you have that number out there. So maybe it's not right to just send, you know, I mean, I think we're being too easy. That's I guess, my thing. Is I think we're just being too easy. We're not making guys, certain guys accountable for bad calls and stuff. And that's unfortunate. You know, they've got to be held accountable in some way. What was the guy years ago they said was, you know, was betting on games? And then there was, a you know, another guy that supposedly had ties to Michigan and all that. You know, why does that get kind of swept under the rug after a while? And I think that's, you know, maybe I'm overthinking it, but it seems to me, do we know who the replay official is? We sort of hear about it in game, but do we know about it beforehand? Does Kirk and does PJ Flutt each know who the replay official is? You know, do they talk to them before the game and say this is what should be expected, and this is what we'll, you know, review closely, this is what we won't? You know, I get that they're reviewing the play. Like Ostrenga's catch. You know, that's a game turner, so to speak, or could have been. So was the Minnesota one, by the way. But, you know, they're also reviewing stuff like where the guy was down when it's on the 38-yard line versus the 39-yard line. If it's not for a first down, if a first down's already been attained, you know, I kind of get it. But they did last night. There was a play in Minnesota where they did review where the ball, where he went down. And it's like the first down was there, and I think it made a difference of a yard. That's kind of, you know, how much time did they spend on that? And it, maybe not much, but why are they reviewing that so closely and yet, you know, other stuff they're not? And the other thing, I still will say, I know some there's a disagreement on whether the fair catch thing last year was reviewable or not. But I think certain other penalties got to be reviewable. I mean, pass interference penalties, I think, need to be reviewable. And frankly, I think they need to change the pass interference rule. I think, you know, 15 yards or spot of the foul, you know, spot of the foul if it's inside 15 yards. I think, you know, maybe they need to make it a spot foul no matter what if the pass is more than or less than or whatever. But right now in the college game, and Michigan State did it to us in the Big Ten Championship, you know, you just grab him. If you think a guy's going to bust past you, just grab him. You know, it's holding or it's, you know, and so you don't give up the touchdown. But you also don't
give up
the ridiculous. Yeah, that's ridiculous, you know, that they can get away with that, but not, you know. So I don't know. I go hot and cold on the whole officiating thing. But,
yeah.
Hey, we came away with a win. So quick question. Do you want to go next week? Do you want to do a show next week since we're not playing or?
I think so. I think there's a couple of good games that we can talk about. You talked about the Alabama-Georgia game. Seeing how Penn State and Illinois go, there are probably a couple of games that will be big upsets that we can chat about, and I think it's worth it. And then, you know, we always hear rumors and stuff that's going on in practices or anybody being out. So, yeah, I think we'll have plenty, you know, at least an hour.
Here's the next question. Can we do it at a different time? And we'll talk off show, but we may need to do it at a different time.
Yeah, we can make it work.
Okay.
Okay, well,
so we're up against it for now. We're in the last, we're actually right up against the thing, and I'm just not hearing the warning from them. But so thanks for being on again, of course, and good win for the Hawks last night. I think we thoroughly did Kirk's job for him yet again in retrospect, so in hindsight. So in the meantime, folks, for Avid Mike, I am Hank Jones. This has been College Football. It is Hank Jones and Avid Mike. We will be back next week. Watch for the time because it will be a different time. It's going to have to be. And I'll be in again Wednesday with Hank Jones Poly Sports. In the meantime, have a great rest of your weekend, folks. And Mike, we will talk to you later.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks. Thanks, folks.
Later.